Thank you. Welcome to this audit committee, Charmont Borough Council. Obviously, it's going to be recorded and made available on the website. People may film or record it, and that's outside council's control. Can you also make sure that your phones are switched off and on silent, and make sure that you switched off your smart speakers, Alexa, Siri, and all those ones, as we're in breach of GDPR otherwise. Got a limit of 2.5 hours. We won't be that long, hopefully. But if it is still ongoing, then we can vote on whether to extend it by half an hour, but only to finish what we're doing. Before we actually get into all this, first of all, I would like to thank councillors, because I guess this might be, for some people, your last audit committee, potentially. So thank you for your contribution so far, and your input into the role of the audit committee. It's much appreciated. Okay, item one, apologies.
So Councillor Baldwin, Councillor Bradshaw and Councillor Snort, and we have substituting for them Councillor Charles and Councillor Hamilton.
Thank you. Our next item is the minutes of the previous meeting from the 31st of January. It seems so long ago. Does anybody have any comments that they wish to make on the minutes, or are we happy to note them, receive them and note them? Yeah. Councillor Hamilton?
In the absence of glaring errors, I guess.
Yeah, lovely. Thank you very much. Item three, disclosures of interests. Does anybody have any interests that they need to state? Scratch your head then, I thought you'd put your hand up. Okay, thank you very much. And item four, questions under other committee procedures. We didn't have any questions submitted. Item five is the external audit progress report and technical update. Mark, over to you.
Good evening. Can I just check if you can hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes, not brilliant. Thank you. So, first of all, thank you for allowing me to dial into this meeting. What is, I will assure you, a relatively short and to the point report that is clean. Good report, good assurance for you. What you have is something, it's the annual auditor's report. It's so that we're required to issue within 3 months of issuing our opinion on the financial statements. And it summarises essentially the work and everything that we've provided to you previously. There's two pages I really just wanted to draw your attention to. Now, I'm not sure if it's the same pack numbers, but I've got page 19 of your pack, which is page 11 of our report, the table. You've got lots. If yours is in colour, it's green. It's not in colour, I'm afraid. It's supposed to be green. What this table is the overall summary by reporting criteria. So under the Code of Audit Practice, we have a responsibility to assess and comment on the council's arrangements in three areas, those being financial sustainability, governance, and improving economy efficiency and effectiveness. Now, what we do is, under each theme, we have a look at the controls, procedures, and processes, and various documents that sit underneath it. We draw from the work we do on the financial statements, and meetings that we have, as well as wider intelligence that we gather. So if you take financial sustainability, for example, we will look at things such as the level of reserves, the financial planning process in setting up a medium-term financial plan, the assumptions that underpin it, and the process of getting to that financial plan. We also look at things such as budgetary control and the process of managing the budgets, reporting variations, budget variations and addressing those. We look at things such as your risk management arrangements, so the process of and the monitoring of your risk register, the functionality of it and how it operates. And we also look at things such as performance management, how do you set your corporate plan, what are the key objectives, and what are you doing in terms of measuring and monitoring that performance, and are you taking action against it? And what we've hopefully set out here is, you can see that our responsibilities are to work out if there's a significant weakness in your arrangements, something you have to address and you have to do something about. And this report confirms that there aren't any. And it also confirms that we don't believe there's a need to raise any recommendations to improve what you do. Now, what I also have to say is in the context of what we do, we have a wonderful word of adequate. So we never say anything that is better than adequate. It may be, but we will never make that judgment because it gets into whole realms of subjectivity. But what this report does do, if you just taking a look at that page, it gives you as an audit committee assurance that the appropriate arrangements are in place across all of those areas. So that's positive for the authority. The other bit that I did want to draw your attention to was page 20, so it's just literally the next page. Now, the bit that I just wanted to hedge in what we're talking about is what we're looking at is the arrangements up to the 31st of March 2022, which is over 12 months ago now. Now, a lot of that, what we've done, will cover things such as the 22-23 financial planning process. But obviously the world did move on quite significantly since then. You take, for example, I think CPI in setting the 22-23 budget, that was probably around about maybe 3 or 4%. If that, probably even less. Whereas in saying this year, it was considerably higher. So the world has moved on somewhat. So I think it's just important just to put that little context in and say, okay, the world has moved on. There are other factors that come into it that we haven't, because we're not required to yet give you the assurance on. So I don't want to give you the false assurance that we've looked at things that we haven't done. But fundamentally, there are adequate arrangements in place from what we've seen. And if I felt there was a need to act on anything that was happening now, I would have to bring that to your attention. So again, I can give you some verbal assurance that there is nothing that I believe that I need to bring to the committee's assurance over any of the arrangements the council has in place at this point in time. I will pause at that point because it's a, I know there's a lot in the report, but that, for me, that's the most important piece.
Okay. Thanks, Mark. Does anybody have any questions?
I have a tiny procedural point. On page 15 of our report, our numbers, there's references to notes, which it might be me that I couldn't see, note 10, note 11. Did I miss those, or do they need to be added?
They're notes to the accounts.
They're referencing back to the accounts?
Yeah.
Okay, so not, they don't need to be added here for guidance.
Is that right, Mark? Yeah.
That is absolutely correct, thank you.
Okay, well, thank you.
Any other questions?
In page 26, in the Tenera Fund, when we go to 24-25, there's a significant drop. Why is that?
That's not something that Mark would answer, I don't think.
But it isn't the same report, isn't
it? It is in our...
Page 26, isn't it?
What we're doing here is the council sets the capital plan over the next 3 years. It's up for the council to determine what it spends its capital on and what it does. It's what we're required to do is we're looking at whether that capital plan is can be funded or not. So in some regards, we haven't picked up what you're spending it on. We're making sure it can be spent and it can be funded. So if you want the detail of the capital programme for that period, you have to go to the, probably full council or all the budget itself. But I can tell you what's in the detail.
Okay.
Thanks, Mark. Any other?
this is the funding of the capital plan. So I think as Mark quite correctly says, things have moved on quite a bit. So if I sort of look at the detail, we've had quite a lot of capital grants, so things like the town deal, etc., where we've had some money in that's enabled us to fund various aspects of the capital plan, capital works around the borough. So we've had that. They tend to be sort of relatively, we obviously bid for them, but when it's very, very difficult to look out 2 or 3 years. So if you sort of look at the columns and the numbers, you would see quite a lower figure for those capital grants in sort of 24, 25. And then the big number at the bottom, internal, external borrowing, that's where we've got our place mark is for the enterprise zone and also the with sort of regeneration type projects, but they're in there on a sort of an opportunistic basis on the grounds that something we, you know, the council has an interest in undertaking regeneration, it is going to forward fund the enterprise zone and allow the enterprise zone to be developed, but we don't know when those sort of things will be. So it's based on events. So, for example, the Childhood Campus coming up with a new initiative where they want to make some forward funding, which is actually in progress. So there was a calendar report, I think, either January, February time, that explained that. And in terms of regeneration, it's really on the whether key sites around town centre would become available and would just allow ourselves to be in a position to buy those, but there's no plans for those. So that 15 million could easily go into future years as it happens.
So, forgive me for being mentally obtuse here, but actually, it's much better to say, actually, we cannot really predict that far, instead of providing a number which may be revised upwards significantly, the way I see it.
So yes, you're right. So there is a tension that we manage between putting a number in that's a place mark and an estimate, or not having that number in. The advantage of having the number in means that if something does come up, it enables us to spend money against those place marks in the capital plan. So certainly on the enterprise, the forward funding of the enterprise zone, we don't know when it's going to happen, but as it has happened, the campus do now want to spend £4.5 million, and we've been invited to forward fund that through business rating 10. So if we hadn't had that amount in the capital plan, we would have still been able to do it, but it would have required a cabinet report, and then it would have required a report to council. So that what it does do is it adds in quite a lot of time to the decision making process. So it's really a tension between not being precise about the number, but allowing us to be more flexible and able to take decisions quicker. So it is a matter of taste, but you know, that's where we are at the moment. You know, we are going to do a new capital plan for next year. And clearly that's something we can discuss as that's developed through the cabinet and scrutiny process.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anne,
thank you. Yes. On your page 22, our page 30, it says that instructions haven't been received from the National Audit Office. Is that concerning? Does it matter? I know we were waiting for something earlier on in the year as well.
So the instruction, we've still not received the instructions. We still haven't seen them. They are being raised to various technical groups, but we haven't received them yet. It's definitely frustrating. It means I cannot issue what's called a certificate to close the audit. The certificate you would receive is one paragraph saying I'm issuing the certificate, so it's not holding the council up doing anything. It depends on your degree of what you mean concern, but there's no liability, there's no action, there's nothing the council can do about that, and there's nothing we can do until we get that instruction. So it's going to stay open, and we don't think it will be resolved till June.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
Just to time point, just for the minutes, in a couple of the final statements on some of the pages, it refers to, the final statement refers to the trust's arrangements. I think that probably needs to be changed to the council. That appears in a couple of different places. It just needs updating.
And I think there's also an update on page 15, page 7 of your pack, Mark, on the audit conclusions, the third one down. I think you've just cut and pasted from the one above. Needs the wording changing.
Yes, sorry, I was nodding with mute. Yep. Yes.
That's no, fine. Okay. Any other comments? No? Okay. Thank you, Mark. Are we happy to take Mark's report with the updates that require to be made? Okay. Thank you. Thanks, Mark. Okay, let's move on to item 6, Council's use of REPA, and it's over to you, Adrian.
Thank you, Chair. So this is the regular report of Council's committee meeting on potential use of our REPA powers, and once again, we haven't used them for the period we refer to in the report. Obviously, happy to take any questions.
Any questions from anybody? I think that's a no. Thank you. Thank you, Adrian. Are we happy to accept Adrian's report?
Yep.
Yep, lovely. Thanks, Adrian. Appreciate it. You okay, Dad? Yep. He's gone. He froze a bit, didn't he?
He's recovering now. He's off the chest.
Okay.
He's going to disappear.
Yes, thanks, Adrian. Okay, item 7, risk management. Over to you, Helen. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. As we've mentioned earlier, the last meeting was the 31st of January. Since then, we've had two events really. The strategic risk register for 23-24 went to Cabinet, was approved by Cabinet on the 9th of March. Shortly after that, we had one of our regular risk management group meetings, which involved the senior leadership and the corporate leadership team, as I've referenced before. So that was an opportunity for that group to have a look at the strategic risk register for 23-24. As requested by Audit Committee previously, I have flagged up under point 5 the changes that have been made to the last version that you would have seen back in January, and they're sort of outlined with a number of changes to several of the risks, most notably strategic risk 11, which you may recall was a new one that was added in towards the end of last year. The reason that there is a greater level of activity with that one is that the new, relatively newly appointed head of strategic housing has taken a look at that risk in a bit more detail and has identified a variety of treatments and controls which we've added in to the actual register. Again, to reflect what's in the table in the actual appendices, the actual risk register, I have flagged up or highlighted in yellow a cross-reference to where those changes have been made. there are a couple where there are completed actions, so they're in there for the audit committee's reference, but assuming that the committee are okay with those, then they will be taken out of the risk register going forward. I'm happy to take any questions. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thanks, Helen. First of all, just like to comment, it's good to see the updates, and it's good to be able to read them and pick them up that easily as well.
Thank you, Chair.
And that obviously the work's ongoing, particularly with the SL 11 as well. Thank you. Any questions?
In page, sorry, page 25, in the strategic risk to civil contingency, target date March 2023, is this completed?
Yes, it is actually. So that was a national that was a national planning event. We had, I think, three members of staff or possibly even more that engaged with it. It was held over a 3-day period, and it was to plan for if there was a national power outage. And obviously we looked at it, we were engaged in it from both a national perspective and a local perspective. We are going to get a briefing at CLT from the officers that attended that to the rest of the leadership team, which was planned for tomorrow, but the officer that was going to do it is unfortunately sick, so that will take place in the next couple of weeks. So yes, we've engaged in the event. We need to cascade the learning.
Sorry, I have to ask the same question about page 51 and 52, communication and climate change, but again it's March 2023. Is it ongoing or completed? Page 51, page 52.
Sorry, which risks are there?
SR8 communication.
Yeah.
Is it completed or it is ongoing?
Yeah, so that's an annual plan that, so we'll be looking to do another one for 23-24, so that will be reviewed. It hasn't been reviewed yet, but it will be reviewed to see whether the 22-23 action has been completed.
And the next page, 52, again the same question, climate change.
I'm not entirely sure about that one. I'm going to come back to you on that one.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Just Councillor, I'm presuming that the financial pressures group is a rename and is now the structural deficit group. That's just a pure rename.
Yes, it is. Councillor Parsons, yes.
Okay. And on SR1, what brought about the Leicestershire, joining the Leicestershire county-wide continuity? Because it's not referenced sort of previously. I missed that somewhere else, did I? Or is that our initiative, county initiative? What brought that one about?
I believe it's an initiative that the LRF have put forward with the view that they would, I think they want some funding from each of the district councils to invest in an officer that would, Simon might know, that would invest in an officer that would work across the county, and we are engaging in that process. The officer, I believe, hasn't been appointed as yet, so I can bring some more information back to a fourth or in the interim if that helps.
Yeah, I think it is an LRF local resilience forum initiated project. They asked us for some money, but having asked us for some money, we looked at it and thought it was a sensible and reasonable thing. So for the potential benefits we get with that extra resource that we can draw on for the relatively small amount of additional cash, we believe it was a reasonable sort of investment. So it's a shared officer amongst seven districts. Seven districts.
At least.
Yeah. So it's dividing by seven won't necessarily cost us that huge amount.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? No? Are we happy to note Helen's report? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, item 8, sit for position statements on audit committees. Kerry, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. First, can I just apologise? On the recommendation, date should say 22nd of May, not the 23rd, so could that please be amended before it's approved? This report highlights the main changes to the updated SITFA position statement for audit committees in local authorities and police 2022. These being the appointment of independent persons on the audit committee and knowledge and skills of the committee. The updated statements include in Appendix A, and you will have received a copy of the guidance that's been released to support and assist with this. This report's to put a proposal forward to the way in which the authority can ensure that it can meet the requirements as far as possible going forward for 23-24. I'm happy to take any questions on the report.
Does anybody have any questions? Okay.
I haven't been through the full report, so my apologies for that in the full SIP report. So I'm asking a question that may already be answered. Is there a guidance as to what knowledge, expertise and interest looks like?
That you will have it within
the main document.
In the guidance document that's been circulated. It couldn't be added to within this document, the agenda, simply because it's a published document that has to be purchased through SIP. And so the copy
can't be released as part of the
meeting. Yes.
But I presume if anybody wants a copy,
it should have been circulated.
Yeah, it's been circulated by email through you, Chair, but if you wish to have a paper copy.
No, that's fine, that's absolutely fine. No, that's fine. It's me, because I might not go through it, but I just wanted to make sure we had a sense of what those three words meant. I'm intrigued about gauging member interest. That's an interesting word to use. How would you find that? I'll leave that. There we go.
Any other questions from anybody on it? Or comments? No? Okay, so I mean, one of the recommendations is
I was just noting what the differences were. I think you're going to point that out anyway, aren't you? Is there like two independent chairs on the committee?
Yes, that's one of the things. I mean, I actually think that Charnwood is quite forward-looking in that they have an independent chair already. A lot of councils don't, and a lot of councils actually struggle to get independent members anyhow. So two could be challenging.
Yes, we'll see.
I think the approach we recognise there is an election coming up, and there's some things in here which are prima facie reasonable, but in practical terms for Charnwood maybe slightly challenging. So there is something in here about members of the audit committee shouldn't necessarily be part of scrutiny or the executive, and I think the executive being cabinet, I think the latter part feels relatively reasonable and sensible, but to not allow members who are part of scrutiny to be also part of audit will be potentially challenging just in terms of getting the numbers on the audit committee, because we do have quite an extensive scrutiny function in Charnwood. So there's a bit of a challenge there. So I think the approach we're adopting is to have a working group and engage with the members of the audit committee who are, you know, recognising they may be different post-election, and getting a feel of what those members think in the light of the sort of new configuration of the council. So there is some quite tricky things, but what we're essentially doing is suggesting that that gets discussed post-election. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I was about to move on to was about one of the recommendations is about the cross-party working group. I was involved in one at Lincoln, actually, so they did a similar exercise a few years ago.
For 2018, when the previous guidance was updated, I would think.
Yeah, I think they've done it on a fairly regular basis. And obviously that needs to come back to the July meeting as well. So I guess some of it will be depending on who's in the audit committee after the elections. I can't really say a lot about that. So we'll have to
Yeah, the reason I brought it to this committee is obviously it's the timing of the elections, it's potential we might have a new audit committee, different members of the audit committee who might have different skills. Which is what we need to identify a lot more, what skills we will have on the new committee, what training is required for them to make to get them up and running, to be a really effective audit committee. And this is why we brought it to this committee now, rather than wait until the July committee, which then delays it even further. When we're going moving on, we could be nearly a year down the line before we get full training done. So this is why I brought it here and put that proposal forward to this committee now.
Yeah. I mean, I think it is key to make sure we get the training in place for everybody as well, because we do have some in prior to our next meeting for new audit members as well. And it's good for updating those who are here already as well.
It's a small point, it's just a point of logic really. If we're going to appoint new people who we don't know the skills and we don't know what they can do, and they're going to be the group from whom we pull the pool of people who are going to decide what training is required, what expertise is required, and how we're going to put that together. It is slightly challenging if we do that. That's a whole group of new people to audit committee from whom the group that's going to choose the expertise, training programme, etc. is then, that's slightly challenging as a concept.
Sorry, Councillor Parsons. Yes, we have there's a bit of a questionnaire that we will send out for them to answer on a personal basis. That details the skills and knowledge that somebody in an audit committee has. But people, we don't expect every audit committee member to have every skill and every piece of knowledge. And they fill it in prior to the working group meeting, and this is where we can identify the gaps that there are, that maybe we need to look at them, focusing on what an independent person, second independent person might need, and also to identify the training needs of the audit committee as a whole then. And if we need to get an external training provider in to fill those gaps, then we can do the initial training. We're doing this overview training of the audit committee's functions, and
I guess we're fairly reliant on the continuity of the independent chair in putting that together. If we get, I mean, just the worst case example, you get six people on the committee who know very little about anything to do with audit, and you're then asking them for their views on what training they require. So we're heavily reliant on the chair to represent to some extent skills, etc. I know officers will bring that as well, but if you've got members who are challenged in that area.
Yeah, I mean, the SITFA guidance and questionnaires are quite detailed and thorough and helpful. And they are useful in this sort of thing.
I'm just wondering through you, Chair, whether it might be beneficial for the committee for Kerry to explain how the working group is going to be chosen. If she knows. Sorry.
I think at this moment in time, we're going to have to wait until after we know who's sat on that committee, whether somebody puts themselves forward, whether we request people to be on the committee. We do have officers that will be sat on the working group as well, clearly to support it, to identify needs, to take on their views and to go forward with anything we need to go forward with. We'll then bring it back to the committee in July to identify where these gaps are and way forward with that, and if we need a job description for the second independent person, and that will be put together that way and go forward there, and any training. Mm-hmm.
And I guess my skill set from my background is quite useful in this respect.
Where will the decision be made about whether we comply with the difficulties of the best practice and have people who are on other scrutiny committees?
I think that is for the committee, and I think there's going to be pros and cons.
But the new audit governance, not cabinet. I mean, everything will finally have to be authorised there shortly, but the decision about whether the
I think that's right. I mean, to be honest, the bigger picture is there is an election, and you will, as members, you will probably know much better than officers, but there's going to be clearly some sort of nomination process to the audit committee, and I guess you know, it may be a view within the group about how what important or significant the audit committee is, and who's interested and willing to undertake the role. So there's all of this sort of that whole process which is within the groups, actually, which we don't know, and to be fair, the groups probably aren't totally aware of that, because it will depend on who's forming those groups as and when it's reconvened after the election. So, you know, the only thing as officers we know quite a few members are standing down, and there's likely to be sort of 20-30% turnover within the membership group, leaving aside any political changes.
Okay. Yes, it's a difficult thing at the moment.
Yeah, we're proposing a process, and I think we'll just have to manage that process as best we can, with sort of a lot of conflicting issues and tensions within that, but we'll maybe have a better view post, by the time we get to the middle of May.
Yeah. Okay, are there any other questions for Kerry about this? No? Okay, so are you happy with those recommendations, first of all, that we've noted the report and that the cross-party member working group will be established?
Yes.
Yeah. And if hopefully some of you are re-elected and choose to be on audit committee with your experience, you will take that forward as well.
You need to be optimistic, you need to do it when you're re-elected.
I'm just enjoying the position you put the chair in there. I see how she responded to that comment.
Just ignore it, it's fine. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Kerry. Okay, and it's still with you for item 9, the internal audit plan progress.
Thank you, Chair. The progress report takes up to the 31st of March 2023. Just really want to run through some points for you to note from the report. We are continuing to make good progress against the audit plan, which is detailed in Appendix A. I'd never expect us to be at 100% on the 31st of March. We always get delays. Continuing to complete the plan, and I expect it to be done in time for me to do my annual opinion, which will feed into the annual governance statement. 8 reports have been issued since our committee in January, and the executive summaries of these are included at Appendix B. There were a large number of overdue recommendations at the time of writing the report. Since then, it's been confirmed that we've had 4 of the recommendations have been implemented. A lot of them are being worked on and are progressing. We just haven't had updates at that point in time. Some of them have had to be extended due to staffing issues, in particular the asset management recommendations. But they are progressing, and we are continuing to monitor them, as you would expect. I'm happy to take any questions on this report.
Thank you, Kerry. Any questions?
Yes, just with regard to the SY06 review, it's partly general observation from time sitting in various different rooms, not just here. I know it's an area of high, we've not been given it the best of ratings in terms of what we've done, and I know the very final point about members receiving updates for scrutiny. It's a general observation that members always feel that there are issues around S106. We always find it a difficult area to get our heads around, get access to information, get what we want. That's a general sense, and we're kind of not substantiating to be strong, but we're kind of reinforcing that a little bit with this report when I get a bit about members and updates and scrutiny, etc. So it's really just a flagging that we've got from a pure member point of view. Officers might tell us it's great and we should all understand it better and it's clear as mud or whatever they want to tell us, but from a member point of view, S106 money constantly is an area
where we're always intrigued, is the way I can perhaps put it best in terms of the transparency to us as members. So it is an important issue, I think, for members, because it's a sense, it's one of the things that we sense, we feel we should have more influence over at times. And so it's just really an observation that the report's almost reinforcing that a little bit from another perspective. And I would hope we can communicate to other members and try and improve that system for us as members in seeing and managing that 106 environment for us.
Okay, thank you.
Page 72, Town Hall audit council contribute to fire. We all know about fire, but I don't really see any information coming up to what it will happen with the fire, what actually what is going to happen. I mean, I'm totally oblivious to what is in the future after the fire. That means, do you have any information about the fire thing?
This is the town hall.
Yeah.
We were going to be doing an audit based around the town hall. We had to cancel the audit clearly because of the fire. It wasn't, you know, we weren't doing any audit work around the fire. It's because staff obviously had higher priorities in the audit at the time.
So how does the fire affect the audit, and how long is it going to take actually for the audit actually to start again? To have a timeline? 6 months, a year, 2 years?
We've put it onto the audit plan for a possible 23-24, if not early 24-25, depending on what's going on. We have to because of what happens at the town hall over the pantomime season in January, February, just how it falls. But it's not been cancelled off the plan totally, it's still sat there ready to do.
Just timing's critical
for
when you do it.
So the 22-23 audit plan, it's been cancelled off this plan.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I apologise for my ignorance. There's a reference on the internals of National Fraud Initiative. Can you just talk about it? That's my ignorance, so I don't know.
Yeah, the National Fraud Initiative is run every 2 years, and it's whereby we collect information, different sorts of information, on the data that we hold. You will have probably received a letter or something on this, so your pay slip and your allowance slip, saying that your data will be put forward to the National Fraud Initiative.
Yeah.
And they do data matching across the country. So it might, for here, it will be people that are sat on, for example, two housing lists, or they're receiving housing benefit in a different authority, but still sat on a housing list, or they might be sat on two council tax and receive benefits. And it's
one of the big things they pick up is a single person discount as well, isn't it? If there's somebody else registered at the house, for example.
Yeah, and it's sometimes people that are on two payrolls, is there some sort of fraud going on there? So
everybody's a lot of data gets matched up together.
So when it says not audit next to it, what does that mean from our perspective?
It's not an audit that we're doing on it. We get the information in and we'll assist some of the teams with going through the data and seeing if what they've matched is actually a fraud, or because they can't guarantee that it's a fraud, it might just be that there's a reason behind it.
Basically, the less is better on that one.
Yeah.
If we see nothing there, that means
it's
great, they're not matched anything
yet. It's not necessarily all about counts, it's about individuals. So we provide a lot of information to do with the data matching, and then we'll get a list of so some people, council have a waiting list, occasionally employees or members, not necessarily charmed, but they just crunch a lot of data, and then we have to work through those examples we've given us and provide a return. That's where Kerry and the team do a lot of work with the teams and helping with the actual compilation of the returns, which. It's a piece of work to do that the teams aren't necessarily very familiar with, so I think somebody's familiar with it.
We'll support them.
think if you Google National Fraud Initiative, there's a document online about what it is and what happens, and then it just comes to every internal audit team to, there you go, deal with that.
I mean, it's just, you know, we do support them. Creditors self pick up, because sometimes I look at creditors, match that. It's the values on creditors. For example, if an invoice is 100% VAT invoice, I pick that up because of the data that we send, that we upload to them. They'll analyse all of it, match it. Make sure that it's all
could be all things.
Yeah,
it's quite interesting.
So many different things on it, yes.
Because of all of the sources that they use. But I think if you Google the, look for the document online, it tells you where all the sources are. I find it quite interesting. That's the auditor, isn't it? Auditor, I'm sorry. Okay, any other questions for Karen?
Well, I don't know if you can answer this one. On page 23 of the report, 93 of the track, it's talking about surplus assets being sold. Do you know what they might be? Just curiosity, really.
So the process is we declare assets for surplus when we're deciding that we are going to dispose of them in some ways. It's more of a, I think it's more of a generic thing. So an example, I couldn't tell you anything we've specifically got on that list. I don't believe there is anything significant, but maybe the one that was more biggest and most recent was Lionhurst Depot. So we withdrew from Lionhurst Depot, then we declared it surplus, which is just part of the process, and then obviously we did subsequently sell it. So it's I think this talks about the process really rather than anything else. So
it could be almost anything, really.
Yes, it assumes we don't need it, but there's a process by which we decide, you know, we don't need an asset anymore, and we're going to dispose of it. Sometimes they're relatively small beer, like the end of the, you know, shop mobility. It's come to the end of the service, really, because things have changed. So we've got few social mobility scooters, but they're obviously, you know, quite they're not necessarily worth a lot after 5 years of higher up and being hired out. The major one is probably Lionhurst Depot in recent times.
Thank you. I think one comment I want to make on it, Kerry, that it's quite, thinking about where we were this time last year, it's positive to see the positive assurance in there that a lot of the policies and strategies are up to date now. So this time last year, we were in a completely different place, weren't we?
Yeah, I think, you know, I'd say obviously coming out of COVID, you know, we'd had a couple of years of COVID, a lot of people working from home, that sort of thing. They were the most important things at that point in time. To be updating, we're just picking it up during those audits as a case.
It was just coming up time and time again, wasn't it?
I think it's been noted across the authority where recommendations reports go to the senior leadership team on a monthly basis. And it has, I would say it's improved it quite a lot, hasn't it? Simon, would you agree?
Yes, a positive thing to note, I think, from it.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Any other?
Again,
that's right.
On the performance indicators.
Which page are we on?
I'm on page 102, is it? I'm just interested in the second one, the client satisfaction with the internal auditor. I mean, who do we ask for that and who has responded, the two responses that we've received?
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head who they were that responded. We send it to the manager of the service that we've audited, so the main contact that we've had during the audit. We can't enforce them to respond to our customer satisfaction survey. We just take it as a positive if they don't respond, because clearly it's a negative, they would be responding. Right.
So how many people would we possibly ask them?
Every single audit we issue, we send out. Right.
I'm surprised that's not really.
Yeah.
because last time the last ones have had an audit report. But yeah,
I think most people don't respond to feedback, they just go, oh, feedback again.
It's a tricky one actually, whether if everyone responded positively, whether you regard that as necessarily positive. Nor it was great, you didn't find anything. It was
it's a difficult one as well, because obviously sometimes if people have got limited audit reports, they might not be as happy with those, and if they did respond, they might not respond in the positive, and it's nothing to do with how the audit was carried out, it's just a result of the audit itself.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Any other comments? Questions? No? So are we happy to note the progress report from Karen? Okay, thank you very much. Thanks, Kerry. See you again, isn't it?
It is.
Item 10 for the 23-24 draft internal audit.
Thank you, Chair. This is the proposed audit plan for 23-24. I've prepared the plan based on an organisation-wide control risk assessment and taken into account the views of senior management. A summary of the audit plan is set out on page 109 of your pack, with a detailed plan included in Appendix A on page 110. It should be noted that timings and audit days in the plan are indications only and are likely to change as we move through the year and audits are formally scoped. I'm happy to take any questions on the plan.
Thank you, Kerry. Any questions from anybody on the audit plan?
Karen, have you got enough staff to deliver these audit days?
We've had an issue with staffing just recently because we were unable to recruit a senior auditor post that we had vacant. We've now restructured the whole of the audit department, the whole of the audit section, and based on not being 100% on the new structure through the year, that's the number of days that we have available. We've taken some days out in case we can't and fully recruit the posts that we've now got available. Saying that, we have just been through one recruitment exercise and we have managed to recruit to one of our audit assistant posts. We've changed one of our auditors' posts, has gone from part-time to full-time, so we have increased the number of days available.
But you're still short of staff then?
We have, bearing in mind we cover three authorities, so it's split across three authorities. We'll go out to recruit again for a second internal audit assistant, and we're going out to recruit to an apprentice auditor. We've been out to recruit, we've just shortlisted them due to interviewing a couple of us for the apprentice. So we are doing quite well this now.
So will we be looking to sort of buy in the shortfall then?
I'm hoping not to buy in any shortfall at all. I'm hoping the plan reducing the days, because I've reduced the days across all three authorities, with the fact that we might not be able to fully recruit to the posts. But we did have positive applications throughout.
Thank you.
Can you just give me a quick bullet point summary of what we mean by the key financial systems?
The key financial systems will be the debtors, the creditors, the payroll, main accounting, housing rents, treasury management.
Will that be done as one single audit or separate reports?
They're done as separate audits, and what we do is we have... individually anyway,
yeah.
And what we do is we have a rolling program whereby throughout over a 3-year period we'll do a full audit on each of the main financial, each of the key financial systems, and we do key control audits in the other 2 years, so we just look at the key controls for each financial system then.
Does that include the budgetary system? our budgeting system that arrives at the budget every year.
We look at it within the main accounting and budgetary control. It usually does, yeah.
Good.
Any other questions? No, I do have, I guess, one follow-on question, I guess, from Mark. I'm presuming with the reduction in days that we're still covered from a statutory requirement perspective.
Yes. Yeah, we have actually have increased our days. Simon and I have had discussions about it based on the level of the audits that we've done over the last few years, the level of assurance that we've been given over there. So we have slightly increased our number of days here at Charm Wood and Wine.
So we're well within the required days. Okay, thank you. Okay, so are we happy? To approve the proposed audit plan, obviously it will change as things change, as staffing changes, but that Kerry's produced based on risk and perceptions of it. Yes? Yes?
I just want to ask one thing, which is I just did a quick tally on the days. So I think you've got 314 days. As the total available, and I just did a quick tally on what we've done this year. I'm sort of tallying around just quickly, around 200 on that audit report that's there. So I'm just trying to make sure those two tally. I've just looked at the internal report as is, and I'm getting to around sort of 200 days in my head, just fact packet, adding it up in my head, which might be wrong. And then on the list, we've got 314, so we will be able to do 314 days.
That's the in-house,
294. 294,
okay. Yeah.
Yeah, we that's it. I apologise. The only ones that we do currently buy in are our IT audit, because it's a specialist area. But as general auditors, we don't have that knowledge, so we do buy in
as most.
Yeah, as security authorities.
You know, I'm just adding up the days on the previous report. I'm just quickly adding up the number of days we've spent on the report so far in the previous report.
So. I guess what you're asking, Kerry, is how has it changed from this year?
We've got 200 days that I can vaguely add up this year to 294, so we see we've got more days, although we're saying...
What we have to bear in mind is sometimes my auditors from North West and Logan will do maybe some more days here at Hebert Chalmers now, so we do a plan based on what we've got, but if there's a necessity to move the auditors around, then we will move the auditors around.
Okay, any further questions, or are we happy to accept the proposed audit plan? Yes, Councillor Parsons? Yeah, lovely. Thank you very much. And finally, item 11, the work programme. I guess that's over to you.
As usual, it's a relatively straightforward report. I think maybe I would just draw people's attention to page 112 and the amendments since the last meeting. So there are things you will be able to see where there's been some changes or amendments.
Yes, there was something due to come to this one, wasn't there?
That yes, so that was set.
So the IT, it's the IT health check.
Yeah.
Because of the timing of when the report pack was issued. Okay, and also given the CIPFA code as well, you'll also know that we've got some training in there as well. 5th of July, Mandatory Audit Committee training for those of you who are coming back to the Audit Committee.
And they're not on holiday.
Please don't go on holiday.
I'm on holiday.
So, through you, Chair, I just wanted to check in the CIPFA report this time, we were talking about a new report back in the July meeting. Do we have something that we want to put on the work programme for that?
We will do,
yes,
please.
Yes. Yeah.
So, that's an additional thing we've hooked out, or is it? Yeah, okay, thank you.
comments on the work programme? Are we happy with that? Thank you. Are there any issues raised during this meeting that you want to take forward to scrutiny?
Can I just emphasise that they need to have an update about the damage from the fire in the town hall and what's happening with this issue? Because you see, I don't feel we have enough feedback. We go to parish councils and parish councils they are talking about the fire in the town hall and the fire in the town hall, but what's happening? How much is the damage? What exactly is happening?
So okay, well, I'll try and explain. So obviously the sort of source of the blaze was the HSBC bank building next door. It did spread to the roof of the town hall, and there was some damage. So it's not super extensive, but there has been some damage. So the roof does require some repair. There has also been some smoke damage to the Victoria room, which will need redecorating. So what's, and then there are also issues around the air handling unit within the town hall also needed replacing, and that's become rather more urgent with the level of dust and smoke around. So what there is some structural damage to the town hall. There is also quite a lot of cleaning up, so that cleaning up will take time. Now what I think where we are is that the theatre will, I can't remember quite, but I think the theatre has now reopened. The areas which aren't reopened are the Victoria room, where we have the sort of annual council meeting, and some of the room hire. So the town hall is back in operation. Repairs to it will take some time, but you know, hopefully the main theatre will be up and running. So I think this, in terms of medium to long term future, then the town hall will get back to up and running and operating as a town hall, as a theatre, as a cultural centre in Loughborough, as it has done. So I don't think there's any question about any sort of medium long term future, but there is quite a bit of clearing up to do around sort of smoke and dust, which is going to take a bit of time, certainly in some areas. So, you know, Victoria, if you've been in Victoria, there's obviously a big room, there's a bar at the, what would effectively be the front of the town hall, and most of the damage is in actually the area above that bar area. So clearly, if you, you know, things like if you were thinking of having a wedding in that room, it's, you know, clearly quite difficult, and logistically I believe that the works will require sort of a bit of storage and moving things around as the works progress, and a lot of that storage is also going to be in the Victoria room. So it's a bit of one of those sort of puzzles where you move things around. So I think the Victoria room in particular is likely to be out of action for some time. But as I say, I think the theatre is now up and running, they're now running shows, so that bit's going to continue.
Presumably it becomes an insurance issue now. Our insurance, and we'll be claiming for that through their insurance.
So there's our insurance and their insurance, so we're in negotiation with that process, which won't necessarily be very quick. And there's also issues obviously around marketplace and the Harris fencing around, and you know, restrictions to the market, etc., etc. So it is quite a big, you know, principally around the HSBC building, and you know, I don't recall how structurally the structural report on the HSBC building, but it's quite, if you go to the market, there's quite a wide area. So if there is some risk of collapse, you know, that's why there's quite a long, that's why the Harris fencing extends quite a long way out from the face of the bank building.
Thank you. Close the meeting. I think Simon wanted to say something.
Oh, yeah.
No,
it's not
going to be that. That's fine.
It's not going to